the greatest compliment is like resident retention. And so like, what can we do to maximize that for them? Because when they no longer have to think about surviving and they can think about thriving, then so much of their lifestyle changes.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Susie Sevier and Michael Barnhart are the founders of Adventurous Real Estate Investors. They specialize in a different ROI, return on impact. Their journey began in the UK, where they are currently living. While Michael is active duty Air Force and getting his PhD at the University of Cambridge, Susie is currently a program manager for a biotechnology company and is moving into real estate full-time in August of 2021, which, Susie, that's when we're recording this right now. We're hearing more about that. Together, they have closed on 188 units in just a year in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Susie and Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having us, Sam. We're really excited to be able to share valuable content with your listeners. And one key thing here is the listeners will have to listen all the way through this entire podcast to get the five actionable steps we're going to tell you how to scale your business.
Man, I love that. I love that. I mean, that is the theme of the show, is how to scale. So I look forward to hearing those five steps that you guys, I'm sure, have taken, and then hearing you share those with our listeners. This is awesome. The same questions I ask everybody who comes on. I'll leave this to either one or both of you to jump in and kind of answer this. Is, where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah, so where we started, so I'll just like literally just go to the real estate part. So like, as Sam said at the beginning, Michael and I are living in Cambridge, England. So we have been here for about a little over 2 years. We'll be here for another year, year and a half. But when COVID-19 happened and all the lockdowns, our first lockdown was a little over 100 days. And like, everybody was sent home. Yeah, right. That face. And we had three total. And so everyone was sent home from work, and I had not yet started my position. And Michael like does wet lab research. And so they're like, okay, well, write your first year report. But Michael's like, okay, well, what happens after this? And I said, we're going to do a mini book club with each other. And so like along the way, one of the books was Multiple Streams of Income by Robert Allen. And a couple chapters in, he talks about real estate investing, and Michael would read the book first and then I would read it. And Michael's like, just skip all of the chapters, just go straight to the first or to real estate. Like, we have to do this. And once we found out that real estate had gone virtual, like, we knew it was like one of the greatest opportunities that we had ever had. And like, initially we were going to do the Burr method. And Inland Hurricane like went through the town or the market that we had set up an entire team from. Like, we did the whole shebang. And so after that, like, Michael and I just were like, okay, well, what do we do now, right? We can't wait a year for the city to rebuild itself. And that was a year ago, like now, and the city is still rebuilding itself. So it was like devastating to the city. And one of our 5-year goals was to go into multifamily. Michael's like, we just got to go straight into multifamily. And I was like, all right, new rodeo to tackle. And so like, just from there, we changed everything that we're doing, all the meetups that we were going to, the education that we were consuming, the people that we were talking to, all of that just pivoted straight to multifamily. And like you said, I guess in that time frame, as of now, we have officially closed on 188 units, and then we have some stuff in the pipeline also.
Wow. Okay. So you've done this in what, 12, 16 months, basically? I guess, yeah, probably 16 months, 16, 18 months. And not only that, but you've done it virtually.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's right. Yeah.
I don't want to steal your thunder on your five steps, but I really want to find out, like, what did you do? I mean, I want to hear about the vetting process. I want to hear about your team building process, market selection process. I mean, just walk us through the iterations, because I'm sure there was more than one. Yeah. Kind of how that played out.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we decided to pivot into multifamily, like Susie mentioned, like, we just switched our education to, and our networking as well, to just multifamily, right? Because we knew we needed to get around people who were doing what we wanted to do, right? I mean, when we started going to those networking events and meetings, people were like, I was like, well, we had it set that we were going to buy like a bunch of single family homes, right? Initially. Then that got kind of ruined, like Susie mentioned. And I was like, okay, we can do like 10 units, you know, 10 to 50 units, right? Or 10 to 20 units. So like, doesn't seem very scary, right? And so after we pivoted into these networking events where people were doing what we wanted to do, we realized that, hey, these people look like us, sound like us, talk like us, right? Like, they're just, you know, they're not some magical people who are closing on 100 units or 200 units or 300 units. Like, they're just like normal people, like you and I, Sam. And like, and so we're in these rooms with these people. We're like, oh, well, we can definitely do this, you know? And so actually we didn't immediately start taking action. Like, I wanted to make sure that we had the education base that we needed, right? A lot of people, you hear a lot of times, like, just take action, take action, take action. Yes, it's important to take action, but at the same time, like, you need to actually know what you're taking action on before you start taking action, right? So there is like a baseline of education that you need to get, especially when you're syndicating deals, and especially when you're taking on investors' money and you have fiduciary responsibility, right? So anyways, it's very important to understand what's going on before you start taking action.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So you started doing networking events, and then you'd selected multifamily. How did you guys select a market?
Yeah, great question. So when we were analyzing a bunch of different markets, and when we're looking at single family properties, like, we analyzed, I don't know, 50 US cities or whatever. And then we just picked one that we were interested in, and that ended up having to be not the right one because of the inland hurricane, but there are some other cities, whatever. But because we also started posting about real estate investing, we started posting on social media, changing like our identity, like from becoming Michael the Air Force officer to Michael the real estate investor, right? So making that shift, we started posting more. That brought out a lot of people from our community who are like, hey, I'm also investing in real estate. I'm here in this city investing in real estate. And so like, I started connecting with those people, and those people were like, the one person we connected with was actually an old classmate of mine from college who I've known for like 16 years. And we connected. He's like, hey, I'm full-time real estate now. I just got out of the Air Force. And so we reconnected, and it was like, his city was actually one of the cities we were interested in. That was Oklahoma City, which then kind of led us to Oklahoma City and Tulsa as being our main two markets there, because we found boots on the ground. And because Susie and I were educating ourselves, we knew we can underwrite. We knew we can develop broker relations with everything going virtual now. We knew that we can do the capital raising piece. We just need somebody there on the ground to walk, to touch, to smell our asset, right? So.
Right. Yeah. Boots on the ground. You can't overlook that. So underwriting is one of those things. We'll jump back in here. Underwriting is one of those things that it takes practice and it takes time. Did you guys join a mentorship group? Did you join somebody? I mean, just getting your hands on those models, you know, building one from ground up, if you don't know what you're doing in multifamily, is, I mean, you could do it. Sure. You guys both seem like you're exceptionally smart. You're in biotech and, you know, you're getting your PhD. So you're a lot smarter than maybe me, but even so, there's some nuance to it. So how did you guys get a hold of underwriting models and really perfect that art?
That's a great question. So there was several different models that were kind of out there. And actually the first book I read was Robert Beardsley's book, you know, Definitive Guide to Underwriting. And then he also offers his free underwriting tool. So actually I underwrote several deals on his underwriting tool. Yep. And then I kind of moved into some others. I think I learned on like six different models and just kind of figured out like which one I liked the best. They all have their ups and downs, and right, like nothing's perfect unless you build it yourself, right? So, and I still haven't built my own, but I've tweaked some enough to like Frankenstein a bunch together, if you will. And so, and you asked a question about mentors. So like, I taught myself as much as I could through underwriting, but I knew the one big piece that was missing was like, okay, how do I know these numbers for this market or this specific submarket are correct, right? And so through networking, we actually met several different people, and we kept telling everybody, hey, we're looking in Oklahoma City, Tulsa, Oklahoma City, Tulsa, Oklahoma City, Tulsa. That drew a lot of attraction to us and saying, hey, I actually know other people in Oklahoma City and Tulsa. And then we started getting these connections, right? And so one of those connections that we made was with this gentleman who is just an amazing individual. And I met him, we had a chat, and then I kind of kept in contact with him. And then I tried to add value to our relationship by like trying to provide him with some tools that I had that I knew he didn't have. We can get into that a little bit here if you want to as well, Sam, but I just continued the conversation, trying to add value whenever I could. And then I said, hey man, would you mind like, you know, meeting and chatting, you know, maybe once a week or something like that, and chatting about my underwriting? You're in the market where I want to invest. You know each of these individual submarkets within the market. You know the numbers and stuff like that. You have several assets in the area. Would you mind just looking over my underwriting, make sure that I'm not missing something completely, right? Because you can only get so far with reading about underwriting, right? Until you actually have on the ground experience there. So, yeah.
So you and this gentleman worked together and really just went over your numbers again and again and again. I mean, it's an iterative process. So that's really cool. It's great that, you know, you found a way to add value to somebody else. Because very rarely, you know, if somebody just came to me and said, hey, I just want to be a time suck, like, you know, bless you, but I don't have time for that. But, you know, yeah. If there's a way to add value along the way, I think that's great. That's great. Yeah. Susie, what were you doing in this phase while Michael is tackling the underwriting side of things? Like, what were you doing behind the scenes, you know, as far as, you know, actively looking for assets? And I mean, I know you were busy. You weren't just standing there. So
no, that's a great question. So like somewhere along the way, somebody was like, you needed to start raising capital yesterday. So I was like, oh, okay, we need to get our foot on the pedal. So like it was creating a ton of content, right? Because even though we meet these people, then what, right? They go to our website, it can't just be empty. So it was creating a bunch of blog content, like putting stuff out on social media, but then with that, having all of those lovely investor calls. So like there came a point where we were having like 20 to 25 investor calls a week. So it was like reaching out to people, like getting to know them, then having that conversation on the phone, like setting that all up. Because what like we or I started doing is that like I'd go to attend different meetups and conferences. Because even with conferences, I mean, we attended like 9 or 10 last year. So quite a few, that's a lot of people to follow up with. Like whenever there was an opportunity for me to snip the screen of everybody who was attending it, I did, reached out to them and was like, hey, like we're attending the same conference. Like, what is something that you've learned so far that you didn't know beforehand? And then like, just generate a conversation from that. You know, some of the conferences, somebody would start like a Google sheet where people were like, oh, I'm just an LP, like interested in deals. So then I'd like reach out to them, or some people were in our same market. So I reached out to them. So I was doing a lot of the talking.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, there's two things that make this business go around. It's deals and money. And if you're not focused heavily on both of those, I mean, God bless you, Michael. You probably were having a blast underwriting, but you can underwrite all day, but it's not going to get you anywhere.
That's right.
Obviously, it's a skill set we desperately need. But you know, you're focusing on the one thing that many people have said time and again, which is, I wish I had focused on the money raise side of things sooner. I mean, I've talked to guys who were way ahead of where the both of us are, guys and gals alike, and they said that, man, if I could rewind time 10 years, that's the probably the number one thing people say. If I could do it over again, that's where I'd start sooner.
Yeah, because I would never like recommend people do like 20 to 25 investor calls a week while underwriting and trying to figure out a property or taking down a property. You know, like that was a lot of time. And you have to think about it too. Like with our time difference, we can't be like functional humans at midnight. You know, like conversations are like blah, blah, blah. And so like we have to talk to people with those like optimized times. And so, I mean, yes, we could have 6 calls every evening, but then still, like we were still having calls on the weekends. We were still having calls on all the time. We even started to open up our calendar to talk to people in the morning. So like we would wake up at 4 so that we could hit people before they went to bed.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Cause if you're what, plus 5 from the East Coast?
From the East Coast, yeah. And 8 from the West Coast.
Yeah.
West Coast, right. So if you catch someone at 4, you're catching them at 8 p.m.
Right.
Before, good for you. I mean, listen, this is the down and dirty reality.
Yeah.
Especially when you're getting it off the ground of what the hustle looks like. So yeah. If you're listening to this and you're like, oh, I'm going to take a course and, you know, go out and invest in real estate, multifamily, whatever it is on a large scale. I mean, it takes doing what you guys and people don't realize how much work content creation is.
Oh, yes. Like I remember my first blog post. I think it took like a really long time, like way more than a week, you know, even writing it, I'm just like, I don't know how to write. But even to add, it's funny that I thought that people would actually read my first blog post. I wish I would have just wrote it faster, you know, because like, if people aren't seeing me create content, why would they all of a sudden, maybe one or two, maybe, you know, but like, it's like a whole new thing. I'm asking somebody to take time out of their day when like time is our most valuable asset to read a blog post. Like, and it's the first time they have potentially ever seen me write one. Why does anybody who doesn't even understand like that I'm in real estate investing yet want to read what the difference between an accredited and sophisticated investor is? You know, like some people probably saw like, what is she talking about? Or just scrolled.
Yeah. Yeah, but don't, I mean, and I don't think you do overlook it. I mean, obviously you're right. When you start out, especially like, you know, people aren't reading it. And even today you might write a blog post and it might get, you know, a handful of views, but that's not the point.
Right.
And the point of it is to get
putting the reps.
Yeah. It's
yeah.
In your reps. And it's also just continuing to present yourself as the, you know, the authority and the person that understands what you're talking about. What are they
called? Yeah. I just mean like, don't be so scared. You don't have to take like a month to make it perfect. Like, cause in that time you could have put out 4 articles, you know, which is way more important.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. The volume and maybe sacrifice a little quality might not be a bad idea. Obviously good stuff, but you know, maybe it doesn't have to be perfect on your first go around. That's really cool. All right. So now we got the money raise side of things tackled. Michael's got the underwriting side of things tackled. Where did the deal come in?
Just because everything went virtual, a lot of the brokers are open to, you know, meeting via Zoom, like we're meeting now, and you know, or picking up the phone more often than just having to take a broker out to lunch or dinner or grab coffee or whatever, right? So yeah, I think, you know, the silver lining in COVID for us was that we were able to, you know, we saw an opportunity there and we seized it. And that was everything going virtual. Yeah, with investor meetings and with broker meetings as well, because then those brokers, I just continued to build relationships with them and then calling them and not really talking about deals, right? Like sometimes you just call them, just chat them up, you know, like, of course, everybody is different. You know, there could be brokers who don't want their time wasted by just chatting, but you get to know the brokers and like, if they like to chat about things that's not work, then you chat with them about that. You know, it's just like building those relationships, those deeper relationships. And from that, you know,
that's where the deal came from.
Yeah. And actually, you know, with the organic mentor that I mentioned earlier, like he was kind of backing us. He was like, you know, the wind in our sails, if you will. And him as part of our team, because we were able to leverage his experience when we were going to these brokers as well. So it's very important. Like if you're a new person, you know, looking for deals, like make sure you align yourself with somebody who has experience as well, because you get to leverage their experience when you're talking to brokers and looking for those deals. So we were able to leverage his experience, and the broker had closed on a couple of deals with our mentor before. And so he was like, okay, he took our offer to the seller was like, hey, I know these guys can close because I have worked with this other team member of theirs before. And so that's how we ended up getting the deal, even though there were several LOIs on the table.
That's awesome. Good for you guys. And that brings us all the way to today, which I guess that one deal was 188 units, right?
The first one was 88. And then we closed on 100 units just shortly after that.
Man, that's awesome. That is awesome. Good for you guys. I mean, this is how it's done. You know, to those who are listening, this is, you've got the playbook right in front of you for how to scale in a very short period of time. You guys have absolutely done it. That's fantastic. So you got 188 units, asset management. Let's talk about asset management a little bit. Now that you kind of have these two in your belt and you can kind of look back on it, is there anything you would do differently? How has asset management been? What are some lessons you've learned in that department?
I think the biggest thing is that like plan A never works. Like, so you could build like this really great business plan. And I mean, even like one thing can change it all, you know, and that's really what it is. I think it's like more being flexible and knowing that like things aren't perfect, right? I mean, even especially right now, like say your make ready crew like gets COVID, and say then like your property manager gets COVID, and then, oh my gosh, your maintenance man gets COVID. Like things come to a halt, and like just stuff like that. But people can get sick. You can have all those three people could have been gotten sick just from something other than COVID, you know, but just like remembering really to like be patient, but like having that plan in place, knowing like what would happen if something else, like just be creative with ways that like, oh, like how can we just focus on things that like help us boost our income? You know, like maybe one task can wait 6 months. Like, although it would be like a great luxury item, how can we move that so that like it can pay for itself eventually 6 months down the line, just reevaluating everything that you look at. But we have like weekly meetings. We use a project management software where like we all communicate and we don't have to go back and forth with those emails. Bids can be uploaded. New conversations can be added, like topics, everything. It's all in one spot. And that saves so much time as well, because now we just get a notification like if something's been uploaded, but we can look at it all the time. Like, and people know what they're supposed to put in there and when it's supposed to be uploaded by. So there's never like this, hey, did you get that bid yet? Did you do this yet? Did you do that yet? And like have 15 emails later, it's like, oh, cool, it's all in there or it's not. And then you can ask the question at the asset management meeting.
Right. Yeah. Right. Absolutely. Do you mind naming that software that you're using right now?
Yeah, we use Asana. There's other things that are very similar, like monday.com or Trello. Hootsuite, things like that. But like that has been an absolute, Susie might be downplaying a little bit, but that has been an absolute game changer for us. Like email is so archaic when it comes to dealing with asset management things. You know, you have to have, I would say you have to have like some kind of project management software, especially when you're doing a value add project.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That's awesome. Michael, do you have anything else you wanted to add to that?
No, I think that's, I was just adding just how important that that project management software is, because it's just been a huge game changer for sure. And I will add as well, it's like, yeah, like Susie mentioned, the plan that you had going in, the business plan you have going, just go ahead and go ahead and throw that out the window. Make sure you still maintain that budget, but it's a lot of things are going to change as you move forward and you find different things as you're opening up walls and stuff like that. So,
I mean, even this, sorry, just like, cause it popped to my head, right? So like property managers know how to manage properties. That does not mean they understand real estate investing, you know? So like they could see a business plan, but not understand like, oh, well, this was the CapEx budget for the full 5 years. We're not trying to go through that in the first 6 months. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, cause they don't necessarily know where money's coming from. Like, and I don't know if like that's something where investors need to start having more of those conversations, even though it's a whole new world then for somebody. But like even just remembering that, you know, because that even like that could even potentially save time with bids, you know, like, no, this is our budget and this is why it's our budget. Like we can't go with somebody who's three times as much, like it won't work, you know? And so just like those small.
Yeah.
One nuances.
One tip that helps with that a little bit is what we've learned is like, so if you have the operations account that the property management company is like managing off of, if you have that drained down to like, say an operating budget of like 30K, I don't know, something like that. If you have like, so, cause all your cash comes in, whatever, it gets funneled into that account. Just have the CFO of your property management company like move that to a different account where you're going to make distributions out of every single month to drain that down. So then when they look at the account, they're like, oh, there's only $30,000 in there. Okay, let's dial it back a little bit, you know? So yeah, don't look like you're sitting on fat stacks of cash. So
hey, like, it's $400,000 in that account. We got plenty of money to go out and, you know, sure we can afford the best, you know, the most costly plumber in town. Why not?
Right.
Yeah. You want to look, that's a great point. That's a very strategic, and that's just psychological, but it's a very strategic move. I like that a lot. Before we run out of time here, I want to give us a chance to talk about your return on impact and what that means for you guys.
Yeah. So return on impact, gosh. So like, it just really means that like when we like serving beyond our four walls, right? Because like as real estate investors, like the residents are people as well. Like, and there's somebody that we also need to serve. And so like with our underwriting, we make sure that the numbers work to where like we can have events for them. We can do extra, you know, education for them, or even when it comes to the business plan again, like so much can go wrong. Like we add that contingency to make sure that like, oh, we didn't know that there was wood rot inside the wall, because that's something that's kind of hard to see, you know, little things like that. Like we want to make sure that's all thought about, because like the greatest compliment is like resident retention. And so like, what can we do to maximize that for them? Because when they no longer have to think about surviving and they can think about thriving, then so much of their lifestyle changes. So like even just one example of that is like we're putting in unit connections and then also like the washer and dryers. And like you gain so much more time when you are like in your home and can like focus on things in your home rather than having to leave to go to a laundromat. So like we just really focus on that return on impact because it's immeasurable, but it like changes people's lives. And that's the most important piece to us, is that like we're doing this so that we can really positively impact others. Cause like personally, I've actually never even owned a home. So like I've only ever rented. So like I totally get like, yeah, right, where people are coming from. Like I want to also provide the lifestyle that I would want. And I'm not somebody who lives in like a bougie A-class apartments. Like I get it.
Right. Now that's probably the best line I've ever heard on this podcast. And this is, I don't know, we're probably approaching 300 recordings at this point. You've never owned a home, and yet now you own 188 units in a family complex. That's hilarious. Well done. Cool. What does return on impact, if any different, for you mean to you, Michael?
It means that, right? So not only focusing on the residents, and another thing too is like tenant to me is like a curse word. Like every time I hear that or whatever. So like, it's like, you know, changing that verbiage, right? When you're talking with other investors, but also, you know, with your property management company, like instead of tenants, they're residents, instead of units, they're apartment homes, right? Instead of complexes, they're apartment communities, things like that. Like just like those little switches, like help, you know, they go a long way, right? And then they help you think about it differently.
Yeah.
But also, you know, Susie's talking about like focusing on what impact we can make on the residents, because these are communities that we're purchasing, but also, you know, what impact we can make in the community around our communities, and then in that submarket as well, right? Like turning around some of our, you know, some of the properties that, you know, get some of the, you know, improve the lives of the residents there, make them feel safe, things like that, lower the crime in that specific area. Just like things like that. But also however we can impact not only the residents, but the community, but also impacting our investors as well. Right. Like how we can make an impact in their life, right? So focusing on the residents and the investors, taking care of everybody that we come in contact with.
Right. That's great. Running out of time here. I've got at least a dozen more questions for you. I wish we could tackle all of them, but nonetheless, I'm trying to look here at my notes. Yeah, I think, you know, for the most part, we've told the whole story. You finally got the 188 units. You guys have told us kind of how you've done it. What are the five steps?
The five actionable steps to scale your business. There's several of them. This is one five-step process here, Sam. Right. That is number one, track your time using some sort of time tracking app or whatever. You can use Toggle. We've used Toggle. So track your time for like a 2-week period, see what you're doing, right? And then take those repeating tasks that you do on a daily basis or weekly basis or whatever, put those into a project management software like Asana or Monday.com or whatever, right? Put it all in there. Number three, make videos on each one of those tasks using some video recording software like Loom or something like that.
Or even Zoom.
Or Zoom, whatever. And then put that link into those tasks, okay? That's number three. Number four is then test each of those videos on your business partner or your spouse or whatever, and see if how you explain how to do that task makes sense to them and make sure that you're not missing anything. And number five, then you hire somebody to complete all those tasks, right? So I'm currently in the process of, we're both in the process of like hiring out all those little tasks that we repeatedly do on a daily basis or a weekly basis, the ones that keep coming up every week, whatever. So we're slowly hiring people to do that for us, because that's the way that frees up more of our day-to-day time. So then we can focus on those million-dollar ideas, right?
Yeah. And even just to add, like, go back to number one really quick. Even when you track your time for 2 weeks, you figure out how much more time you actually have, because you've wasted so much time like, oh, checking email. Oh, I got on my phone. Oh, I did this random thing. Oh, wow. I thought I was going to text my mom back for 30 seconds and now I'm somehow on the internet. You know,
so Sam, the ultimate goal to that whole process there is you want to eventually walk away from this business, right? Yeah. And you can't do that until you can be replaced completely. And you think about this, and it's kind of morbid, whatever, but if you were to die like tomorrow, would somebody be able to pick up and take the business where it's at, right? So like if I was to pass away, like I want to, that everything, yeah, everything is in project management software, all the tasks that I had to do, all the important things. There's a video of how to do it and everything. And so that's the ultimate goal, right? To be able to walk away for months or years, right? And then have somebody take over your business.
That's fantastic. I love it. Let's jump here into the final four questions. First question is this. I'll let Susie, you can take the first one. If I gave you just $20,000 to invest in real estate with no previous real estate investing experience, what would you do with it and why?
Oh my gosh, that's hard. I'm going to educate myself to figure out what the best option is to do with my $20,000.
That's the wishing for more wishes when you rub the genie. It's all right. Well, it's your answer. I'll let it slide.
Thanks.
Very good. All right. Here you go, Michael. You're number two. If you could help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
That's a great one. So if you are dealing with a seller who is vertically integrated, meaning they have their own property management company and things like that, make sure that you verify income multiple different ways. Mm. And I mean, multiple different ways, like tax returns, bank accounts, certified rent rolls is not enough. You need resident ledgers and everything like that as well. As much as you can get during the LOI process, when you get an under contract, verify income multiple different ways, because it's very easy for somebody who's vertically integrated to fudge numbers.
Oh, for sure. And maybe even not accident, or maybe not even on purpose. you know,
right.
if there's, okay, we moved it from here to here to here. I mean, it might even be accurate accounting for, you know, following accounting principles, and it's still, you know, it just might not be exactly the way you need to see it in order to generate a legitimate offer.
Exactly.
Property.
Exactly.
So that's a really good one. I like that a lot. That's a great answer. All right. Number three, and we've already asked this, but either is the toss up for either of you, or, you know, investing in the world. What's one thing you guys are doing right now to make the world a better place?
Oh, so right now we're truly just focusing on all of the residents and all of our investors. So like pre-COVID, we were very heavily involved in like volunteering and mentorship, but like over here in the UK, that's come to a halt. Nobody is near anybody really anymore. So right now it's all investors, all residents, all like building our plan so that we can just serve others once the world opens up again.
Right. Great. I love it. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah. So as we talked about returnal impact here and that, so if you want to learn more about returnal impact and listen to our podcast as well, The Ventures of a Real Estate Investor, where we interview real estate investors and talk about what impact they're making in through real estate investing, you can go to adventurousrei.com/info. And that's a landing page where you can read about returnal impact, find our podcast, find our YouTube channel, and then connect with Susie and I as well via LinkedIn and other social media platforms.
That's awesome. Susie, Michael, thank you so much for coming on today. I do appreciate it.
So much fun, Sam. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.